It is the match made in heaven. Plants breathe in carbon dioxide and breathe out oxygen. People breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide. Some now say this made-in-heaven relationship has gone astray. And so we ask, why did God's green gas become an official pollutant of people?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 773rd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Bondi Beach who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Easton Allen on the boards here at Broadcast Central. Folks, sometimes in a rush to explain everything in a hurry, we stumble and say the wrong thing. A person might say, for example, I grew this plant from seed. This observation seems pleasant enough, so we assume it to be true. However, when you really think about it, the converse is closer to the truth. You see, green plants are autotrophic organisms that take simple elements and inorganic compounds from the environment and convert them into the complex organic compounds required by heterotrophs, such as you and I, you and me. This relationship is further enhanced through respiration. Plants breathe in carbon dioxide and breathe out oxygen. People breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide. Given this relationship between plants and people, would it not, therefore, be more appropriate for people to say, I was grown from seed by these plants? We make note of this minor detail because some now claim that the made-in-heaven relationship between people and plants has gone astray. People, these people say, are emitting way too much carbon dioxide and thus changing our climate. Not to be left behind, the federal government has declared carbon dioxide to be an official pollutant and has sought, and is still seeking, to gain total control over how much carbon dioxide people may emit. All of this leads us to ask today, why did God's green gas become an official pollutant of people? And here to help us find some answers, we have geographer Leighton Steward, who is author of Fire, Ice, and Paradise. Leighton, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you aboard. Now, you are also the author of a New York Times bestseller called Sugar Busters. How on earth did a geologist come to write Sugar Busters?
Oh, it just turned out that my father and all four of his brothers, my uncles, developed midlife diabetes. And I knew that sugar was bad for my father's diabetes, but I did not know at the time that it may have caused his diabetes. As I found out that that was probably the case, I got interested in it because I was beginning to put on a few midlife pounds, just like my father and the uncles did before they all got diabetes. And they got me interested in that subject. And thus, I picked up three doctors to go in with me to write the book, and we had a bestseller book.
And you really were one of the first in changing how we see sugar, right?
That's correct. I'm not saying we were the first. This glycemic index approach, which you hear of a lot now because our book got cloned way back there, just tells you that you should be eating the lower glycemic carbohydrates or the lower blood sugar raising carbohydrates, you could say, because we just about wear our pancreas out with today's consumption of not only table sugar, but refined carbohydrates.
Sugar in the morning, sugar in the evening, sugar at supper time, right?
That's it.
That's
you
it.
Bet.
Well, how did you go from sugar to carbon dioxide?
Well, as a geologist, I have a lot more training into atmospheric temperature and all of that kind of stuff than I really did in going into a Sugar Busters kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I was at a meeting with an expert on stable isotope technology, and he told me, he said, Layton, did you know that CO2 levels used to be 7,000 parts per million? Now, Michael, I know you know it, but for your audience, we're only breathing in 390 parts per million right now.
And it used to be 7,000?
Used to be 7,000 about 500 million years ago. So because I'd had a lot of luck riding sugar busters, I thought, well, if I'm a geologist and don't know this, I think I'll put together a little pamphlet on this just to let all the other geologists, geophysicists, engineers that still have day jobs and don't have time to mess with this in the evening, I'll put a little pamphlet together and show the tremendous impact that 7,000, 5,000, 3,000 parts per million CO2 levels must have had on Earth's climate. Well, I started into that, and after about 3 months, I said, Layton, you're the dumbest researcher there is. You can't seem to be finding any evidence that really proves that. So I walked around and got on the other side of the table, and I said, well, maybe CO2 is not having that much of an impact. And I began to really stack up a lot of peer-reviewed studies and things that showed me that was the case. So I clearly changed from one side to the other of this. I've been an environmentalist all my life. I even have an Environmental Excellence Award from the Environmental Protection Agency.
So you became apostate.
Yes, I changed from one side to the other, and now with 6 more years of study and research behind what I've been looking at, I'm convinced that this, I hate to say it, but I'm convinced this just appears to be a big sham. There is plenty of empirical evidence, real observations, that show that carbon dioxide is not having much of an effect on Earth's climate.
Well, now, just a second. You know, when I put out my press release that I was going to have Layton Stewart on my Food Chain radio program, I got a lot of very angry people. Well, this is one of them. It's kind of fun, so we'll read it.
Great.
I would never willingly give professional propagandists one more opportunity to dishonestly suggest that science and scientists are divided when it comes to the issue of climate change. The overwhelming body of scientific evidence and of scientific organizations in this country support the conclusion that human-forced climate change is occurring and that the attendant impacts are mostly negative and will increasingly threaten ecosystem health and stability, and with it the well-being, if not survival, of a significant part of the human race. Wow.
Oh, I love those kind of comments. They're absolutely unbelievable. The evidence that they're talking about is coming purely from climate models that are made by people. And the modelers are feeding it, as one of the physicists up at Princeton said, at Pushkin's trough. The Russian poet Pushkin said, where there is a trough, there will be pigs. And I'm telling you, people are lined up at that trough, and it's not just the academics, it's a whole lot more people are there also. I would like to suggest to the person that made that comment, if they've been able to work themselves up to listen to your program today, why I can go in and look at thousands of peer-reviewed studies that say just the opposite of what was claimed, because more carbon dioxide has been proven by the agricultural community, the agricultural universities, the greenhouse operators, that the more carbon dioxide we put back in the atmosphere causes a tremendous increase in plant growth.
Well,
and that is making our ecosystems and our habitats much more robust. And why on earth would anybody come out and say the opposite when they don't have the kind of peer-reviewed literature that backs this up like I'm talking about?
Well, that's why I come to bring you on to this Food Chain radio program, because as an astute observer, I guess I would hope to be able to use that term, of agriculture, I know that those people who have greenhouses, double pane window greenhouses that really seal the atmosphere out, use carbon dioxide or supplement with carbon dioxide to increase the productivity of their plants. And so I got to thinking, if this is what agriculture is doing to get more production out of their plants, how on earth did this God's green gas become an official pollutant of the federal government? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here with Leighton Stewart and you. We are talking CO2. And is it really the pollutant that we have claimed it to be, or is it something else, a life-giving force, perhaps? You're invited to join us today. 831-479-1080 is the call-in number. Leighton Stewart, Michael Olson, and you. Greenhouse gas, right back.
Get this, the average... acre farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, I don't know about you, but I've always enjoyed working with plants out in the garden, out in the field, in the farm. I always suspected that it had something to do with the relationship, you know, between person and plant. The plant breathes in carbon dioxide and breathes out oxygen, and the person breathes in oxygen and breathes out carbon dioxide. And it's this wonderful relationship that you have out there under the sun together. Leighton Stewart, how on earth did God's green gas go from being life-giving force to being a pollutant?
Well, it gives the government more control over us. It gives them an opportunity to tax our use of carbon dioxide. As the tax dollars flow through an administration, and I'm not just talking about the Obama administration, any administration,
right,
they can use that flow of tax dollars to buy votes.
Yeah, and but that has nothing to do, Leighton, with it becoming a pollutant. I mean, that's a political force that I hope to get to down the road on this discussion. What about the pollutant part?
Is absolutely false. The government itself does not follow that. If you take our nuclear submarines, for instance, the Navy lets those nuclear sailors stay underwater for 90 days, up to 90 days, and allows the CO2 level in that submarine to build up to 8,000 parts per million. Now, like I said earlier, we're only breathing 390 here at the surface. Go to the astronauts. NASA will tell you that for a three-year program in space, if somebody's going to Mars and it's going to take them 3 years to get there and back, they will allow those astronauts to breathe 5,000 parts per million for the 3 years. That alone tells you that CO2 is not harmful to man at all. I've asked nearly every audience I've talked to, can anybody in the audience give me a single example of carbon dioxide being a pollutant? It's not. If somebody fell over in your studio right now and you had to give them mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, you would be breathing into their lungs, out of your own, 40,000 parts per million. That's 4% CO2. And you'll save their life by doing that, breathing 40,000 parts per million, maybe up to an hour before the emergency people get there and try to go further and save their life. There is just not, that is a lie that CO2 is a pollutant. So let's check that one off, because I just, nobody, I mean, if somebody in your audience can come up with an example short of saying, well, if you put 100% CO2 in the atmosphere, you won't have any oxygen to breathe, but that's ridiculous to even talk about that. So
well,
that's one thing.
Yeah, but they say it's an official government pollutant, and they have labeled it as such, and they say that it increases global warming. Is that what they say? I think they say, or maybe it's global or climate change now.
Yeah, well, they started out saying global warming, and that's what they're still really talking about. They're saying climate change because the Earth isn't warming right at the moment and hasn't been for about 15 years now, and they don't know how to explain that, so they're just going back to a more general talk of saying, well, it's going to eventually be climate change, and it'll eventually get warmer again, and so forth and so on. It's let's get into some of this empirical evidence I'm talking about, because all of these catastrophic forecasts are coming out of climate models, and the climate models since 1988, when James Hansen went in and testified to the United States Senate, none of those forecasts have come out to be true. And the modelers themselves will tell you that their models are still inadequate. Yet, when these forecasts come out and are picked up by the media and go on into our policymakers and at the Capitol, they don't come with a warning sign that says, hey, by the way, these models are still somewhat unreliable. They're just taking the bottom line and running with it. Like I say, 6 years ago when I got into this, I assumed that carbon dioxide was causing global warming because it's all I had ever heard about or read in media.
There's a scientist named James Lovelock. Have you heard of him?
Yes.
Who was the, I guess, the father of the Gaia theory that the Earth is a single living organism.
Yes.
And he was one of the original proponents of this global warming theory.
Yes.
And even he says it just ain't happening yet.
He's just changed his mind.
Yeah.
And he's come out publicly and said that he and Al Gore were wrong about CO2 being any kind of an imminent catastrophic problem. So that was a big change.
Well, I guess you changed your mind too, didn't you?
I did.
So
yes, I did, because of looking at the empirical evidence. Now, as a scientist, we're taught way back in college that when somebody puts forth a hypothesis, and that's all this is, it's a hypothesis that man-made carbon dioxide is causing global warming or climate change or whatever, that hypothesis needs to stand the test of empirical evidence, and which is just means you've got to look at real observations. Well, let's give me just 1 second, and let's talk about just a few of these empirical observations. If we just take today, Earth hasn't warmed now for about 15 years, yet carbon dioxide levels are still going up at record rates, and we admit that they're going up at record rates. But the climate is not warming, so something out there is overpowering carbon dioxide. Now, if we go back into the last century and look, what got everybody all excited this last century was that in the 80s and 90s, the temperature levels were going up. At the same time, CO2 levels were also going up. They had really started going up after the Second World War. But, and that got everybody thinking, oh boy, look how they're tied together. They're both trending upward. But if you go back from the 1950s to the 1970s, the temperature actually was going down, and that's when even in, I can't remember if it was Time magazine or what, the big headlines were going into another glacial cycle. But most importantly, from about 1910 to 1940, 45, the temperature was not only rising, but it was rising at a steeper rate than the 80s and 90s, and yet back then the carbon dioxide levels were hardly changing at all. So this is empirical kind of evidence. Let's look at the entire interglacial period, which is the 10,000 years of what we call the Holocene. 50% of the time of the Holocene has seen temperatures on Earth higher than they are today, yet the CO2 levels from that time till today have gone up 38%. And yet the temperature back then was warmer than it is today. Michael, this is empirical evidence. That's why some of us scientists are just looking at this with astonishment and saying, well, I guess what the public needs to find out about is the unreliability of these models, because the modelers can't go back and recreate these old temperatures on Earth by saying CO2's causing the change, because there's not that much correlation between CO2 and temperature change.
Leighton, what do they say about you? What did those other modelers on the other side, what did this guy say? It's the overwhelming preponderance of evidence that there is global warming.
They don't take me on in a technical debate. They just say, hey, this guy used to work in the energy industry, so he's just going out and trying to sell some kind of story. They say that despite the fact that I probably have better credentials than 95% of these people as to being an environmentalist, because I've pretty much been that way at least for the last 30 years and have won many, many awards for being an environmentalist. And in this instance, I started out on the other side. Why did I do that? Because I know that we have polluted the earth. We've destroyed habitats with farming, which removes the forest and the grasslands. We've had urban sprawl, clear cutting, overgrazing, overfishing, polluting rivers and things, and I'm nearly always on the other side of this issue. But
this time we wonder. We're going to have to take a quick break when we come back. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Leighton Stewart and you. We're going to go to the phones when we get back. 831-479-1080. Well, folks, it is the match made in heaven. Plants breathe in carbon dioxide, breathe out oxygen. People breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide. Some say this made-in-heaven relationship between plants and people has gone astray. They say people now emit too much carbon dioxide and they must be controlled, and therefore we should allow the government to control all of the carbon dioxide we emit. What do you think? Why did God's green gas become an official government-sanctioned pollutant? Is it because carbon dioxide that we're emitting is causing greenhouse gas? I don't know. Leighton Stewart, is that true?
Well, the United States Supreme Court did give the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, the option of considering carbon dioxide a pollutant, because the court said it's not for us to judge whether it is or not. You're the official body of the government to look at things like this. And so you can choose to call it a pollutant, and EPA jumped all over that, and they're calling it a pollutant. And they're using it to really stifle a lot of business growth in this country, unfortunately.
Well, let's go to the phones. Folks, the phone numbers today here on the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host, with Leighton Stewart, author of Fire, Ice, and Paradise. Boy, where's that paradise at, Leighton?
That's today. If you look back at Earth's old temperatures, we would not have wanted to live certainly in the ice ages, because these interglacial periods like we're in right now usually don't last but about 10,000 years, and then you have 85% to 90% of the time when you're in glacial times. And if you want to talk about not having much plant growth, all you have to do is go back and look at the paleontological record and see what happened when the temperature got cold and when the CO2 levels dropped.
Oh, that doesn't sound good. What about you, Roy? What do you think?
You know, thanks, Michael, number one, for having your guest on. This is always good to hear reasoned scientists explain the facts. And he just got to the point that, you know, somehow this wound its way to the Supreme Court. And it sounds like the Supreme Court maybe abdicated their responsibility here and didn't crack open a high school science book to realize that CO2 is a plant food It is not a pollutant. This is an erroneous ruling, and it should be struck down. Briefly, there's a way to learn the essential plant nutrients. And maybe your guest knows this. It goes C. Hopkins Cafe, managed by my cousin Clyde Como. And in there is the names, the elemental names of everything that the plants need. And the first one is C, the letter C.
Carbon.
Yes.
Hydrogen.
That's what we're made out of.
And exactly. And this is, like you said, Michael, this is God's dynamic plan. And us foolish men have now claimed an essential nutrient for plants that is actually driving greenness on the earth is a pollutant and needs to be regulated. By golly, and there's a legion of bureaucrats just waiting to be paid by you and I to monitor and restrict the very things we need to thrive as people on the earth. So I applaud you. This message is getting out, even though there's a brainwashing in the mainstream media to stop this. But I applaud. Is it Leighton?
Leighton Stewart. Leighton Stewart.
I hope you've heard you before, Leighton. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, bless you for bringing that up. Let me give people an example of what Roy is talking about here.
Thanks for the call, Roy.
Thank you.
You bet.
Take care.
If we were to, we're breathing 390 parts per million right now. If we were to add another 300 parts per million CO2 to the atmosphere, let's look at the 8 most consumed food products on Earth, and there are 759 studies by the agricultural community to prove this in real experiments, not in model studies, but in real experiments. We find out that barley, rice, wheat, soybeans, white potatoes, sweet potatoes, corn, and cassava are the 8 most consumed foods. And that if we added that 300 parts per million to the atmosphere, that the increase in growth of these would go up by 39.3%. Now, that's the average of all of those 759 studies. That's looking at real data. So, Roy, that really backs up what you're saying. We all learned in the third grade that CO2 is what plants eat. This is just gotten way off the tracks. The true environmentalists are on the wrong side of this issue, which I finally figured out. And we ought to be happy about the CO2 that's going into the atmosphere, unless it's carrying some other pollutant with it, which is generally not the case these days. And so it's just mind-boggling that we've gotten to this point on a life-giving carbon dioxide.
Do you remember the moment when you, as an environmentalist, were working to prove that carbon dioxide was a pollutant, a global warming?
Yes.
And do you remember the moment when you sat back in your chair and thought, uh-oh, I'm on the wrong side of the road?
Yes, I did. I picked up either Science or Nature magazine journals, scientific journals, and they had an article in there about the fact that carbon dioxide had been proven through the ice core analyses that CO2 levels were following the temperature up and following the temperature down, and a cause does not follow an effect. So just all of a sudden overnight became apparent to me that, well, I'm going to jump on the other side of the table and see if I can find more evidence that CO2 is not a problem. And, of course, what I was giving you a while ago were some key examples of that. And being a geologist, I'm trained to look back at how the Earth has been and what the processes were that formed the mountains and everything to see why the Earth's like it is today and maybe what it may be like tomorrow, in fact. And so in looking back at all of that empirical evidence of what's happened in the past, it became quite obvious that carbon dioxide's not having any significant, it's having an impact, but it not a significant impact on Earth's climate.
Well,
Winston Churchill said, the farther backward you look, the farther forward you are likely to see. And it fits this just like a glove.
And who looks farther back than geologists?
Well, that's right. We go as far back as we can go. Astrophysicists, maybe.
Maybe,
they,
yeah.
They go back 14 billion years.
Marshall.
Hey. I find it kind of funny the name that they gave it as a cap and trade, because if you cap everything, like the air that we breathe, if you tax the air that we breathe, you cap everything, you have nothing to trade.
There you go. You
well, know, and if you reduce it, you will cause plant growth to become much more stunted, I should say, much less robust, and more people on Earth would starve to death.
Well, Marshall, you brought up a real interesting point we're going to pick up when we get back, and that point is, what the heck does politics have to do with God's green gas? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Leighton Steward and you, 831-479-1080. We're talking about carbon dioxide, that gas that the good Lord put on Earth to turn our plants green and thus give us, you and me, the energy we need to walk on the Earth. Without that gas, there is no us. Right back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Supreme Court of the United States has given the Environmental Protection Agency the right to claim that carbon dioxide, that life-giving green gas from the gods, has that green gas of life is a pollutant. And therefore, to save the Earth, we must cap its use at a certain level. And the only way we will then be allowed to emit carbon dioxide, which is to say breathe, I guess, is to trade for that privilege with those people who do not emit too much, or something like that. Leighton Steward, author of Fire, Ice, and Paradise, how did we come to the point where this gift of God, this life-giving gas, became a pollutant in the eyes of the political establishment?
It really started in the 80s and 90s when, like I say, the temperature was going up at a fairly high rate, and the carbon dioxide level was going up. And even the scientists that took a glance at that said, well, gee, CO2 may be really driving this.
And you were one of those scientists.
I was, because I had a day job, and I didn't have time to look behind any of the claims or anything. But even the guy that was the father of it, Roger Revelle, back in 1960, who had in his class, by the way, some gentleman named Al Gore, he said that, I think that the CO2 we're putting in the atmosphere may end up being a problem and cause accelerated warming. But, he said, and somehow the media always drops the rest of his sentence, he said, but I think that remains to be proven, and I do not recommend that we take any action on that at this time. He said that again in the late 1980s. He died in the early 90s, but he gave that same thing and said, I think we need to wait at least another 20 years before we make a decision on trying to take any action on whether CO2 is causing a problem or not. Well, the 20 years is up, but all the evidence that's coming in, like from the ice cores and measurements of how much heat is escaping at the top of the atmosphere and things like that, have come in, and they're saying that this does not appear to be a problem. The Scientific American took a poll, I guess it's been over a year ago now, of thousands of their readers. Scientific American magazine is probably the most generally read by the science community. It came out, and 91% said the climate scientists should be discussing these uncertainties. And I mentioned the uncertainties in these model results. 91% said that we're misleading our policymakers. 77% said they think that change is by natural causes. So when somebody comes out and says there's a big consensus out there, that is an abject lie. It is not backed up by the facts. If they say, well, the national whatever association has 18,000 members, and that association says it's a problem, ask them why that association hasn't taken a poll of their membership. Because I guarantee you all 18,000 of them in there don't believe that.
But let me approach this from the politician's side.
Okay.
It would seem to be a great deal that CO2 is a pollutant. Would it not? I mean, if CO2 is a pollutant and you can control the CO2 that people emit, then you gain total control of the universe, do you not? I mean,
yep,
if you allow a person to emit only so much carbon dioxide, you've got them by the whatever, and
that's
they're not
correct.
Getting away.
You do, and I do not dispute what you're saying, Michael. I'm afraid that's true. Look at it from the other side now, because I always like to try to end this with some kind of a positive note. I think that empirical evidence, just using what Einstein said to do, he said, for any hypothesis, you need to look at real observations to see if it supports your hypothesis or the hypothesis is false. So as far as I'm concerned, we have proven that it's false. That's my opinion. Look what great news it would be for Earth if we just simply let the CO2 we're emitting go to the atmosphere. We'd have a general greening of the earth. The ecosystems and habitats would become more robust. The plants and trees would use water more efficiently, and I can get into that if you want to later. Food production per acre would increase, and this would mean that less of the existing pristine land would have to yield to the plow to be able to feed a growing population. The subsidies for the current uneconomic, unreliable energies could be shifted to research in those areas. I think we need to be researching alternative energies, but they are not ready for prime time right now.
So
if we use this cheap energy that we have an abundance of, our economic recovery would be faster and stronger, fewer jobs and industries would move overseas, and we could stop paying these countries for having sent them CO2, which has provided them more food crops for decades. That's getting back to why this is a global thing. Of the 192 countries in the world, 172 per the Kyoto Agreement, the Copenhagen Accord they tried to pull off, 172 of 192 would receive billions of dollars from we 20 countries that are the so-called developed countries.
So what you're saying is that they're going to take money from you and me and give it to somebody else.
They're going to take money because we've sent them the best airborne fertilizer in the world.
Makes all the sense to me, folks. This is the Food Chain right back with a parting shot. We're going to pick up Mike on the phone as well. Where do we go from here? Is there a way to unscramble this?
Well, let me tell you what's just happened.
Okay, hold on.
Oh,
we have to take a quick break. Right back. Well, folks, God's green gas, the gas that gives you and me life, is now an official pollutant of the federal government of the United States. And they aim to take charge of it. And so where does all of this take us? Leighton, you were talking about, Leighton Stewart, my guest today, author of Fire, Ice, and Paradise. Leighton, you were saying that something just happened. What was it?
Well, I gave this presentation on empirical evidence last year to about 100 of the retired NASA scientists, astronauts, etc. And they just sent a letter about 3 weeks ago to the head of NASA saying they did not believe these catastrophic forecasts. They were embarrassed by these statements coming out of NASA, etc. I'm not saying I changed their mind with my presentation. I think what happened was after my presentation, they all realized they already felt that way. And we're talking about 7 of the astronauts. We're talking about 2 of the former directors of Houston, we have a problem, the Space Center in Houston. And 13 of these 49 people that signed this letter are PhDs. This is not a casual bunch of people. So for where do we go from here? Things like this that are happening and getting public, and that announcement of that letter made international news, all of that's going to help let people see that this is not a fact, that carbon dioxide is having a major influence on our climate. I would like to further suggest that anybody in your audience, if they would like to see some of the backup evidence I'm talking about, I'm chairman of a nonprofit called PlantsNeedCO2.org, and that is the educational arm, PlantsNeedCO2.org. Also, I'm chairman of CO2isGreen.org, that lets us go and try to tell somebody that all of this stuff they hear about carbon dioxide being a pollutant, et cetera, is not true.
Well, you know, the funny thing, Lee, is that you suggest that plants need CO2. Well, the other half of that is that people need plants.
Correct.
Without plants?
Absolutely. Oh, without plants, there's no life on Earth. And look, if the environmental extremists were successful in taking the CO2 level back down to what it was at the industrial when the Industrial Revolution happened, we would lose up to 50 to 60% of the food crop growth that's in some of our spring wheats and rice and things like that. I mean, it's clear these plant production is tied to how much CO2 is available. It also gets stimulated by nitrogen and other things. But CO2 is the big atmospheric fertilizer.
What can those of us who are not scientists do? You know, we hear evidence suggesting that the both directions on this are true, that CO2 is a poison, and yet CO2 is a life-giving gas. And what can we do?
Well, I would simply refer you to the first of my nonprofits, say mine, our nonprofits, PlantsNeedCO2.org, because it has all that information in there. It has the information in there about the frailty of the climate models. And as people learn more about this and talk more about it when they're talking to their neighbors and everybody else, it's going to dawn on everybody that CO2 is not a problem on Earth. In fact, it is an opportunity for Earth.
Thank you very much, Leighton Stewart. What about it out there? Why do you think God's green gas became an official pollutant? Thank you all for tuning in, and join us next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain. And remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you, Leighton.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.